welcome to the Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka The Proof Fairy, and this podcast is an opportunity for me to have a chat with an author about what inspires them to write, how they go about the writing and publishing process, and what effect it's had on their life. And I also ask them for tips for other aspiring authors. I'm thrilled that this podcast seems to have gone international. 2 weeks ago, my guest was in Scotland. Last week, they were in the US of A. And today we're heading to Vancouver, Canada, to meet John Leister, who has more than 50 books to his name and many more to come. Our conversation takes some interesting turns. It includes mentions of death, suicidal thoughts and religion. So if any of those themes trigger you, you have been warned. And apologies for the background noise. John was recording his part in a Starbucks, and I hope it doesn't affect your enjoyment of the show. John, thank you for being a guest on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me on. It's a great opportunity. It's great to meet you.
Ah, it's lovely. It's lovely to meet you too. So you have written many books, haven't you? Over 50 yes. books, I believe. So tell me a little bit about them.
The first book I published, plug, 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 is called The Collected Cases of Lee Hacklin, 1970s Private Investigator, Book One. And there are a whole bunch of very bite-sized short stories, 5 to 10 pages long, that I wrote maybe around 2005. And one day I came home from work, and I won't go on about this too much, but I was feeling somewhat depressed and kind of at the end of my rope in life. And I kind of reached out to God for help, and he helped me believe in myself. And so I looked at these short stories, and my theory is that you're a writer. I think that if you have some distance and you look at your writing a little bit more objectively, you begin to see that maybe it's not that bad. And so anyway, I cobbled these stories together, and I put them online, uploaded it to Amazon. And this was about 3 years ago. And now I've got about 60 books. My Lee Hacklin stories take place during the 70s, 80s, and 90s. I would describe my writing style as, are you familiar with the writer Robert B. Parker? Do you know who that is? He's a mystery writer.
Don't recognize the name off the top of my head, no.
He created a character called Spencer, which was a TV series with Robert Urich back in the 80s. And then recently it was a movie with Mark Wahlberg called Spencer Confidential. Now, I love Mark Wahlberg, but I couldn't really see him as Spencer. But anyway, you know we're kind of fussy about casting, right? So he was one of my favorite authors when I was a boy. And he has a very punchy, kind of in-your-face writing style, you know, not overly descriptive. And Spencer is very much an everyman kind of classic heroic character. He's always sort of commenting on human nature and interacting with all kinds of sort of, you know, idiosyncratic and zany characters while he's kind of the straight man. And, you know, does whatever it takes and is fearless and has a good heart. But is also, you know, he has his vices. Like Lee Hacklin is a smoker and he likes his beer and he's kind of a skirt chaser. And I set the stories in the 70s. Mainly because I didn't want to deal with technology. I don't want him, you know, finding a missing child just by going online, right? He has to do the legwork, right?
And I also good idea.
Yeah. And I feel like that as a writer, when you set stories in different eras, I feel like you have a little more latitude as with regards to political correctness. You know, I feel like that if I set my stories in present day, I sort of have to deal with the snowflake culture, and I don't want to get political, but I just don't. I like to think that back in the day, things were just a little bit more, I don't know. I mean, we tend to romanticize our youth a little bit, but I like to set these stories during that time because I just feel like I have a little bit more leeway in terms of what the characters can say, and hopefully we'll be taken in context. Like, I would never have a sympathetic character make a racist comment, but I would have a very unsympathetic character, a very unsavory character make a racist comment, and then Lee might, you know, beat the crap out of him and say, hey, watch your mouth kind of thing. You know, I think context is everything.
Do you know, that's really interesting. I wrote my first novel last November. I did a NaNoWriMo novel, you know, the National Novel Writing Month. And I just sat and bashed this. It's turned into a contemporary romance, which wasn't the intention, but that's what it ended up. But one of the characters in there is a really unpleasant, it's the main character's father. And he's very old fashioned. He's a very unpleasant character. And he quite often uses racist language. Yeah. She brings a guy home who is Portuguese, and he refers to him as a Dago. And for me, that was, I would never, that's not language I would ever dream of using myself. But for this character, it seemed to, the only person who's read the book is my mum so far. And she really liked it, obviously. She really liked it, obviously. But she said, do you think it's all right using the language? You know, she said, I get the character. I get that he's really unpleasant. But do you think it's all right using that kind of language in there? And I was a bit kind of,
I think you have to be fearless when you're writing and not worry about offending people. I mean, look at Quentin Tarantino back in the day. Well, I remember when I saw Reservoir Dogs, I was really shocked hearing the N-word. Like, I can't even say it, you know, over and over again. And I thought, can I swear? Can I use an unnaughty word?
Is you okay can or if you not? Want. Yeah.
Family, family? I thought this guy really has balls. You know, he's got very, very big cojones to write that kind of dialogue. Yeah. But again, I think the content, I don't really watch the news very much because it brings me down. It makes me feel depressed. But I understand there's a lot of book banning going on these days in some of the schools. And they ban books like Huckleberry Finn. I mean, for goodness sakes, you know, the people who promote that kind of stuff, they just come across as so ridiculous. And they don't understand, again, content. I think that's a really important word. You know, these books are not promoting racism, right? Mm. They're about racism, right? So I think it's important to be able to separate these things. You know, otherwise, you know, you just go through life being offended by everything. You're in a constant state of emotional upset because you're offended by everything about you. So that's my Lee Hacklin series. And he goes through what I'd like to think anyway is an interesting evolution. The first story is called Radio Silence, where he actually gets his license in the mail. And he's like me when I post my books. I have to show everybody on my phone that I posted another book. So we've got to show everybody his private security or private investigator's license because he's all proud of himself. And he's young and he's wet behind the ears. And then the most recent one, Judgment Days, which is about a serial killer judge who takes place in the 1990s. He's in his 40s. And, you know, he's a little different. You know, he's a little more mature. He's married. Spoiler warning. He does get married and he has a son. And he becomes, you know, it's kind of a hero's journey. You know, he starts off like Luke Skywalker in the first movie and then becomes maybe less interesting as he gets older, but more mature. And then my other series is called, and most of my stories take place in what I call the Johnnyverse, which is sort of my version of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Except for Morningstar's Night, which is my superhero story. It's basically Superman meets the Book of Revelations from the Bible. That's the only thing I've ever written that was set in present day. But all of my other stories take place in the same timeline. So in one of my Lee Hacklin short stories, I created a character called the Urban Tiger. Whose real name is Tommy Ryder. He's a 15-year-old boy. He tries to be a superhero, basically. He puts on a mask and he runs around at night trying to be a Samaritan. And winds up, he spends a lot of time in hospital. He's a lovely boy. He's a sweet nature, but he's also a total badass. And so I remember, I used to be an avid comic book reader, and I still like that stuff. I remember, are you familiar with Kick-Ass, that character?
Yeah.
The movie Kick-Ass. So I remember when that comic book was released, it really broke my heart because I bought it and I read it and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, like I've had this character in my head for, he's very similar. In other words, you know, superheroes, that genre, it's always about someone who's motivated by a very dramatic reason to do such a crazy thing, like put on a mask and a cape and decide to fight.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
My parents were killed. You know, I was sent from another planet, right, to redeem humanity, right?
Yeah, but yeah, there is that backstory.
Never moved, exactly. There's got to be some really psychologically quasi-believable motivation because nobody does that in the real world. Mm-hmm. But I thought, wouldn't it be fun to just have a kid who likes comic books say, you know what, I'd like to do this. I'd like to try this. Right?
When I grow up, I want to be a superhero. Yeah.
I just walk around at night and, you know, maybe help old ladies cross the street, you know, not necessarily beat up drug dealers or whatever. And so I read Kick-Ass, and when I started writing, and I saw the movies, of course, and I love them. And when I started writing, and when I created the Urban Tiger character, I thought, you know, if I start worrying about originality, if I start worrying about that, then I won't write anything. And this is what I tell people who are aspiring writers, because I've heard this, because I'm friends with a lot of writers online. And I've heard this, like people who want to write, and they don't write because they don't have any original ideas. I said, for goodness sakes, you know,
I mean, there are no original ideas, are there? I don't think there's any original ideas left.
Even George Lucas, when he created the original Star Wars, he said in many interviews, he just cobbled together, you know, all the stuff that he liked as a boy and put it into a blender, and out came Star Wars. I mean, if you ever watched The Hidden Fortress, I don't know if you're familiar with Akira Kurosawa. He's a Japanese film director who is one of George Lucas's biggest influences. That's where the Jedi come from. These old samurai movies. The Jedi are sort of based on samurai from that George Lucas watched these movies when he was in film school. Now, if you watch the first 10 minutes of The Hidden Fortress, which is made in the 1950s, it's Star Wars. It's these two losers wandering through the desert, moaning and groaning about their lot in life. And even some of the dialogue, you look at the subtitles and like, my goodness, it's 3PO and R2-D2.
Wow. You know? Yeah.
And George just comes right out and says it. And good, mm-hmm. and good for him. I mean, I remember back in the day, you know, Battlestar Galactica, the original TV series? The first episode was released in theaters in Canada. And I remember me and my friends, we were 12 years old back in 1978. We all saw the trailer for Battlestar Galactica. And we're like, oh my, this is such a hokey ripoff of Star Wars. But did that stop us from seeing it? You know, hell no. Loved it. We loved it just as much as Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
I always tell people out there who want to write, just if you want to tell a story about a farm boy who goes off to fight an empire in another galaxy, do that story, because by the time you finish it, it's not going to look anything like Star Wars. The premise might be similar, and the reader might say, well, obviously, this is inspired by Star Wars, but that it's coming from you, that is what will make it original enough. I mean, I remember I read a lot of, I don't know if you ever read fantasy series. I read The Sword of Shannara back in the day. By Terry Brooks. I think he's a UK author. And he's very prolific, very successful author. And I read that book and I was enjoying it, but I thought, well, this guy just ripped off Lord of the Rings. He's just changing the names of the characters, and instead of a ring, it's a sword. But I didn't care. That's my point.
Because
I enjoyed the story, it was a pleasure to read. And it was different enough. I mean, he didn't get sued. It's not like the Tolkien estate. You know, that's my bottom line. As long as you don't get sued.
As long as you're not actually copying, as long as you're not actually plagiarizing the text, I think there are new ideas.
I mean, there's a line in the sand somewhere, right? Like Len Larson, he did have to make some changes to Battlestar Galactica back then. Like Fox actually did sue Universal Pictures for making that show, because it originally was called Star Worlds. Right? It was a little too on the nose.
Oh yeah.
And Richard Hatch, the character that he played Apollo, his original name was Skyler. Believe it or not.
That's too close.
Glenn Larson, who created Battlestar, who's passed away, good on him, you know, he made some changes and he created a successful franchise that became its own thing, and they got remade years later. Was shot in the remake was shot in Vancouver. I got to meet a lot of the actors on that show, by the way. Write what's in your head, just spit it out there. And as long as the book's not sitting next to your laptop, and you're not a writer, you're a transcriber. Right.
Yeah.
As long as you're not doing that, you know, I remember watching The Matrix back in the day, thinking, "Well, this is just Terminator all over again." You know, the machines have taken over. But I still enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure I heard someone say years ago something like, "There's only actually 5 stories."
Yeah.
You know, and everything is just a variation of those stories. And it's so true. I mean, we're picking up things all the time. We're taking on both experiences and songs and books and characters and plot lines and anything you come out with is even when you create a whole imaginary world, a lot of that is going to be based on things that you have experienced in your own life,
right?
Because there is nothing new. Everything comes from something.
and we all have unique experiences that we can put into our stories.
Mm. Yes.
You know, and the longer we live, the more experiences that we have. And we all have stories that we told our friends and family where they went, oh, come on. No, that didn't happen. Really? Are you kidding? You know, truth is stranger than fiction, right? I mean, when I was young, I was very critical. I was an uber critic of everything. But now that I'm older and I understand how much effort goes into a book or a movie or a film, it's amazing that anything ever turns out good. You know, just write what's in your heart and never don't worry about originality. I'm kind of floundering now. Anyway.
It's also the same with nonfiction books. I often have people say to me, but you know, there are hundreds of books about accountancy or coaching or whatever their specialist area is. And I say, yeah, but they're not by you, are they? You come to it with your own unique perspective and your own experiences and your own take on things. So it's the same thing, isn't it? There are no new ideas, but whatever you're writing about, you're putting your own spin on it. So
So that's my Urban Tiger series. And then I wrote another couple of books called Red Star, The Taking of Red Star 1. So my Red Star series, I'll never write another science fiction novel again. Because for me, as much as I love the genre, I'm a huge nerd. I found that series, it's only $2. It's basically The Hunt for Red October meets Star Trek.
Right, so, okay.
A little synopsis.
No new ideas.
There you go. I actually Googled that, The Hunt for Red October meets Star Trek, and I didn't get any hits. Like, instead of a submarine, it's a spaceship, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the far, it's anyway, I'll just go a brief overview of the synopsis of the story. So it's the far future, the world will become a police state, and sort of the haves and the have-nots. And so did the Elon Musks and the Richard Bransons of my universe. They saw the writing on the wall, and they saw this police state essentially taking over the world. So they left Earth and they colonized another planet called, which they called Liberty. And there's no aliens, there's no time travel, there's no fantastical elements. It's sort of a military science fiction story. So the president of Earth, her name is Gabrielle Lilly. Lilly comes from Lucifer. She decides, well, we're going to invade this planet Liberty because they're doing really well, and Earth has 25 billion people and half of them are starving. So my main character is basically Marco Ramius from The Hunt for Red October, and he's named Sean Hardy. And outwardly, he's a loyal officer to the Gov. The Gov is the name of the sort of evil empire, a la Star Wars. They award him command of this new ship called Red Star One. And so he and his crew, they decide to steal the ship and defect essentially to this planet called Liberty to defend it from the impending invasion. And when they get to Liberty, I have some fun with the story because have you seen Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home? You know, the one with the whales, where they go back with the whales now? Are you Trekkie at all?
Star Trek IV.
Yeah, that's the one with the whales.
I only know Star Trek Next Generation. I haven't seen any of the Star Trek films at all.
Oh, is that right? Oh my gosh. Well, God bless you. But anyway, so in that movie, the main characters, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, they go back in time to present day, which in that movie was 1986 San Francisco. And it was kind of a comedy. It was like a fish out of water. You know, these perfect people from the future interacting with, you know, regular people. And it was very funny. So when they get to Liberty, my heroes, you know, they've never seen a bar. They've never seen a restaurant. They've never seen a movie theater. And they actually go to see a movie. And the movie they see is called They Picked the Wrong Man, which is the 70s exploitation flick, which just happens to be Lee Hacklin's favorite movie. So I have these little Easter eggs. Yeah, I have these little Easter eggs in my books. I have another book called The Treehouse Avengers, which is a standalone. And that's the book that I'm absolutely, I consider it my magnum opus. I consider that one to be like, if anyone has the most potential to break out, and other people have told me the same thing. The Treehouse Avengers is about a boy named Clint Wagner. He's 10 years old. He's very much based on me. It's very autobiographical. He's abused at school. He's abused at home and bullied at school. And he's very overweight and very insecure. And he has no friends. And he's a total comic book nerd. But he's a very sweet boy. He's like a Charlie Brown kind of kid. And there's another boy named Billy West, and his dad has built him a treehouse. And he and his friends hang out after school and on weekends reading comic books. And they call themselves the Treehouse Avengers. Now, Clint desperately wants to be a Treehouse Avenger. He wants to be part of this group. But the other boys don't want to have anything to do with him until Billy gets the idea. Billy gives him these seven tasks, a la the seven labors of Hercules. And so if you commit to seven tasks, so for example, he's got to pull on the bra strap of a girl that he likes at her birthday party, right? He has to fart in class while the teacher's talking. He has to, he has to see an X-rated movie in Times Square. And he actually, and I just, it's kind of all ages book. The movie he winds up seeing is basically a bunch of topless women playing volleyball. It's pretty innocuous. But are you familiar with Charlie Chaplin?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So he wears his Charlie Chaplin Halloween costume, complete with the Hitler mustache.
With the little mustache, yeah.
And the woman who sells him the ticket at the movie theater is like an octogenarian. So she falls. So he gets into the movie theater, and lo and behold, who's in the audience? His dad. Right. And his dad's been telling his mom and Clint that he belongs to this tennis club, and that he goes to play tennis every week. But he actually watching porns. So his dad, Clint's dad, is an extremely abusive and violent man, as my dad was. I don't mean to throw him under the bus because he's not able to defend himself, but he was not great around kids. Mm-hmm. And so there's a subplot of Clint's mom having an affair. And so there's a little bit of a mystery because there are many characters. There's a mystery. So who is Clint's mom having an affair with? And then Clint is befriended by the principal of the school who kind of takes, it's a bit like Karate Kid aspects of it, where this principal takes Clint under his wing and teaches him how to box. And so without spoiling the whole story, what happens is the Billy asks the final task, which I don't want to spoil, is so repugnant to Clint. Like the ultimate final thing that he has to do to be a Treehouse Avenger.
Yeah.
He realized, you know what, screw you guys. I don't want to be a Treehouse Avenger. I just want to be myself. And that's what the theme of the story is, self-acceptance. And then the bullies show up, Pug and Mike, and they try to burn the treehouse down. And Clint becomes the hero, and he puts the fire out. And then he gets into a big fist fight with these two bullies. And of course he wins. And then after that, Billy's like, you're in. And he's like, And then the story takes place in present day. And it's sort of an idyllic alternative timeline of how my life could have gone if I just believed in myself a little bit more when I was a boy, because I wanted to be a comic book artist from a boy. But I was lazy and I gave it up. And I tried acting for a couple of years. I took acting classes. Have you seen Rocky IV?
Mm-hmm. Probably. I think I've seen all the Rocky films. So yeah.
I'm in that movie. I'm actually. Don't see me. Yeah. I'm in the crowd. I worked for one day on Rocky IV.
Yeah.
Just alone and the big fight at the end. That was fun. But unfortunately, and I hope this doesn't gross you out or gross out your listeners because it's not very pleasant, but I developed psoriasis. So okay. I've always had very dry skin, and it just got really out of control. Like it just, like I didn't want to, I felt like a pariah. And so I gave up on acting. And every few years I've always felt that I was meant to do something artsy and creative with my life. But I read all these self-help books, you know, Anthony Robbins and Wayne Dyer, and I listened to the tapes and I did the exercises and I found that to be very beneficial. Like looking back on those times, I don't feel like I wasted my time because it was a lot of very useful stuff. And it did help me feel a little bit better. But I was always one step forward. I was always going back to my comfort zone, which was basically pounding down junk food and just sitting in front of a screen, you know, watching all these DVDs. I mean, I was a DVD junkie. And it was very frustrating for me at times because you ever watch the special features on the Blu-rays, you know, like the
interviews with the directors and the bloopers and the extra bits and pieces.
The deleted scenes and so forth.
Yeah.
So I would watch these writers' rooms, you know, where you see the directors and they're sitting around, they're talking about next week's episode.
Oh, discussing the scripts and everything. And
I'd be shoveling pizza. I used to weigh 250 pounds. I used to be very overweight. And I'd eat all this pizza and chocolate chip cookies and just, it was a miracle I didn't give myself type 2 diabetes. And I would just want to dive into the screen. And just my heart was aching because I'd have my own ideas. And I'm sure you've had this experience, and I'm sure everybody has this experience where you're watching a movie and you're like, or you're reading a book, and you're like, why didn't they do you have your own idea for something that would like added something to a scene, like a little humor or a little drama or something. And so I've always had it in me to do this. And again, I don't mean to be preachy about this stuff. If you're atheist or agnostic, that's fine, whatever works for you. I'm just sharing with you and your listeners what worked for me. I took a leap of faith that God was real. I don't think that there was anything mystical about it. I just realized, you know what? I'm wired in such a way that I cannot go through life alone. I need someone. I need a Mickey. I need an Obi-Wan. I need a mentor with me 24/7, almost like Big Brother from 1984.
Watching over you from the corner, but maybe a bit more benevolent than Big Brother.
I feel like people tend to try a little harder when they know that someone who loves them is watching them. It's kind of like, imagine you're at school and you're a kid and you're playing cricket or whatever. I don't know, I don't mean to stereotype. Maybe you're not really into it, but then your mom shows up or your dad shows up and they're watching it. My hallucination is that most of us are going to try a little bit harder, right? And so about God. And here's an example. When I posted that, I'm not a tech savvy guy, Adam. I really need like someone to hold my hand a lot of the time. Not so much now, but when I uploaded that first book 3 years ago, it was an uphill battle because Amazon, and I don't use Amazon anymore. I use Draft2Digital now. No, I've never had no hiccups with them whatsoever. But with Amazon, and I guess I should be careful because they practically own the world. It seems. You know, they weren't accepting my banking information. And I would click to the next page and they'd flip me back to the previous page and I was losing my mind. And I kept asking people at the library to help me. If I didn't have God in my life, like knowing myself, I would have given up after the second and third try. And my inner monologue would have been, you know what? My ship is like, it's just a half glass, half empty type of inner monologue. You know what? I had my 20s, 30s and 40s to do something interesting with my life. I kind of blew it. I guess I'm just going to be a security guard for the rest of my life. But because I had God in my life, and it had been in my mind's eye. And, you know, if it turns out that I'm wrong, like, so what? You know what I mean? Like, it works for me. Because I had God in my life watching me, he said, John, are you going to stick with this or are you going to give up? No, I'm not going to give up. And finally, when I finally uploaded that first book, have you seen the movie Billy Elliot?
Yeah.
Okay, so you remember when Billy is asked, how do you feel when you dance? He says, I feel like electricity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excuse me. That's how I felt when I posted that first book. And it's become an addiction. And I'm working on another one right now. And I'm just going to keep pumping these things out. And my hallucination, it's somebody out there. I have an Indigo. By the way, just for your listeners, my Indigo page is John Leister. So if you go to indigo.ca and type in John Leister, you can see all my books. And I would be more than happy to email any of my stuff for free. If anybody's interested, my email is John Leister, J-O-H-N-L-E-I-S-T-E-R, 601@hotmail.com. You know, my hallucination is that someday I'm going to meet my Alan Ladd Jr. And he was the Fox executive from greenlit Star Wars. You know, George Lucas had made American Graffiti, which I still think is someone's best movie. And he was a hot director. Nobody wanted to make Star Wars. Everybody around him. And that's another important thing too. You can have a really great idea, but everyone in your immediate vicinity thinks it's not such a great idea. You just have to connect with that one person who believes in it, who has that power, and then boom, off you go. And you don't, you know, the whole world can think you're the world's worst writer. You only need like a few, like a million people is not that many people as compared to the rest of the world. If they see something of value in your stuff, well then, hey, guess what? You know, you might have a career. And I'm not a materialistic guy. I'm not fantasizing about having, you know, a bunch of cars and a bunch of houses and this and that. I just want to be able to wake up before I die and be able to, people ask me, what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a writer.
Do you not feel that you are with 50 books out there already? Do you not feel you are a writer?
Absolutely. Already? But I'm not, it's not putting food in my stomach.
Okay.
My security job is worth putting, quote, paid for this Starbucks coffee and paid my phone bill. So I guess, but in the broadest context, I'm a professional writer, if you look at it that way. But I want to be able to say to people, it's like, well, I worked in the service industry for 30, 40 years, and now I'm working in the creative industry. And there are people out there who are paying me for my creativity. And when I open my notebook, and I write old school, I get to my notebook and pen to the dollar store. After an hour, I've usually got 5 single space pages. And I don't know if it's good, but I react. I think the standard of whether, first of all, you should write because you enjoy writing. Never mind whether you think you're good or not. But I think that if you're reacting to what you're writing, that is equivalent to what your intention is. Like you write something that you think is funny and makes you laugh. Well, there's got to be at least one other person in the world who thinks it's funny.
Oh gosh, definitely.
You're moved by something. I mean, I wrote a Lee Hackland story called The End. Now, Lee has a mother named Allison Hackland, and they have a very stereotypical mother-son relationship. Well, I wrote a story where she, spoiler warning, where she dies of cancer, and she tells Lee for the first time that she was proud of him. And the last line of that book was, she closed her eyes for the last time. And that's the last line of that story. I know I can do this, right? Yeah, so I mean, those are most of my books. I wrote another standalone called Hitting Bottom, Looking Up, Finding God, which is very autobiographical. Mm-hmm. It's about a 30-year-old security guard named, I forgot his name of all things, Leo Johnstone. And he falls in love with a book editor named Aquarius. Leo and Aquarius, what are the odds, right?
Nice, yeah.
So, but unfortunately, she's dating a very violent drug dealer by the name of Alexander Archangel. And the theme of that book is how you can be a good person, but be so good as to be passive and to be weak. Mm-hmm. Whereas a very evil person might be seen as more attractive to other people because they have the kind of determined, they're very determined to get what they want in life and they're prepared to do whatever it takes to get what they want. That most of us would be considered to be maybe immoral or wrong. They don't care. They have that sort of fearlessness. And so what happens is Alex sees Leo flirting with Aquarius at a club called Viceland in Vancouver. Alex beats the crap out of Leo, and Leo comes home to his apartment and he begins the spiritual journey that I began 3 years ago. He starts talking to God, and he goes through the feelings that I went through, which was a feeling of decompression, a feeling of not being so uptight all the time, of self-acceptance. I mean, my skin has improved dramatically over the last 3 years. I used to have white, scaly patches all over my arm. And now my arms are almost completely healed. No steroid creams, no prescription medicine. And I'm not suggesting there's anything mystical necessarily. But what I am suggesting is that the more that we accept ourselves for who we are and just go with who we are, the less stress we're going to have in our lives. And when things don't go on our way, we feel, you know, there's always little hiccups in life, right? Stuff that happens that is less than what we want. You can deal with that stuff better. But if you're bouncing off the walls in your mind,
You can.
Right?
Yeah.
All those hiccups are going to be a lot worse. And so in the story, Leo, he starts to write. He's following his bliss of writing. The bad guy, Alex, he's traveling around the world doing his drug deals. And spoiler warning, the story ends in this very apocalyptic martial arts battle between the two characters in the streets of downtown Vancouver. Most of my stories end that way. Look, I'm not the most original guy, okay? The stories are what they are.
You know what you like writing, and that's what you write.
I like a story that has a strong moral protagonist and a very irredeemable. I'm so tired of political correctness in movies where the villains have these, they are portrayed sympathetically. Some people
you want a real bad guy.
Suffer. And so when Alex dies, Leo actually sees his soul descend to hell. So there is kind of a metaphysical aspect to that story. But I mean, you know, getting back to Trios Avengers, that book was very therapeutic for me to write, because part of why I've been, you know, I don't want to be beating myself up too much, but my head has been a little bit messed up, partly because I did grow up, you know, with a very abusive dad. And so writing that book was very therapeutic for me. And I wrote a scene where the man that Clint's mom is having an affair with actually gets into a physical encounter with Clint's dad, and they get into a fist fight in front of Clint. And I tried to write that scene as such a way as to ask myself, well, how would I have felt if I had seen someone kick my dad's ass? My dad was like a cross between Sean Connery and Daniel Craig and Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was an alpha. I mean, women just adored him. Every woman he ever encountered flirted with him like crazy.
Fell at his feet, kind of thing.
And he was a super alpha male, but he was also a bully. And and I'm sorry, Dad, I know you're not here to defend yourself because you passed away. I'm sorry for throwing you under the bus. But he was just really into domination and power. And so I asked myself, how would I react if I had actually seen someone stand up to him? Part of me would be cheering, but another part of me would be probably fearful, because at the end of the day, he's still my dad. And so I think I had a tendency to go through my life. I remember I had a girlfriend in my 30s, and we were arguing about some trivial thing, and I was giving her crap for something I was overreacting to something. And she said to me, John, I'm not your dad. And that was, that was one of the most revelatory things that anyone ever said to me in my entire life. And it helped. And I actually went into therapy after that. I was in therapy for a year, because what I was doing, and I was even aware of it sometimes, or sometimes not aware of it, is I had a tendency to superimpose my dad over other people. So if somebody said something to me that maybe I thought was a little bit less than polite, or a little bit less than complimentary, or it was like an attack. I always had the feeling that I was being criticized or attacked. And so that, you know, that sapped a lot of my motivation to reach beyond my book.
I get that 100%. I was in a violent relationship for a long time. And I came out of the relationship and I managed to rebuild my life and get on with things and went to university and did all sorts of, you know, did all sorts of great things. And on the surface, my life, you know, I was fine. I was over it. And then he died quite suddenly. And this was 12 years after we'd separated. And I suddenly realized that for those 12 years, I had still been playing the part of the victim, because that was what I was used to, you know? And all of a sudden I was kind of left thinking, but not only are we not together anymore, he actually physically doesn't exist anymore. And I'm still responding to everything that goes on around me like I'm this victim. And it's a very strange, very strange realization when you realize that that's hard.
God bless you, because some people will go through their whole lives with that mindset and they will never achieve anything. Because why would you reach beyond your grasp when you have it in your mind's eye that people are awful? You know, my dad said a lot of racist things. You know, do you know Irish Spring? You know the soap Irish Spring? Do you have that soap where you...
No.
Anyway,
this is cool.
Anyway, I'm going somewhere with this. I think I'm anyway. So every time I grew up thinking that every Irish person was in the IRA. My dad would make a comment about, throw a grenade into a church, why don't you? He would make these kinds of ridiculous comments. And I'd be 5 years old listening to this. I'd have this struggle in my mind of, well, this is like hearing 2 + 2 = 5, but it's coming from my dad. And my dad is the smartest guy in the world.
Yeah. So it must be right. It must be right.
It must be right, yeah. But it doesn't make sense. It creates a tremendous amount of stress.
Yeah.
And some, you know, look, some kids are, you know, are very abused and they wind up doing a they choose fight over flight. Like this producer, Joe Straczynski, who created one of my favorite science fiction shows called Babylon 5 in the 1990s. You know, his mom tried to murder him twice. His dad was a Nazi. His dad participated in a war crime. I mean, he grew up with, you know, his grandfather fed him dead pigeons. I mean, you should read his book called Becoming Superman. His childhood made my childhood, you know, the grass is always greener, right? His childhood made my childhood look like the Brady Bunch.
Right, yeah.
He went on to become an insanely successful writer and producer and film producer. But I can tell reading his book, and if he ever listens to this podcast, I hope that he doesn't think that I'm saying anything that's negative, but I can tell that he's still messed up. You know, we all have our stuff.
Yeah.
And we have to live with it and we have to make it work for us because otherwise it's like an albatross around our neck, like walking around with a suitcase chained to your leg and it just kills your motivation. And so the distractions of life, like overeating or drinking too much beer or just vegging in front of the TV all day or playing video games all day, you know, all of the distractions that we have can become very attractive.
Yeah.
Because it's like a drug, right? Or, you know, people who pump their bodies full of dangerous drugs that they know can kill them. And why do they do it? They do it because they're suffering. There is so much emotional pain that they gotta do something right away. Otherwise, they might actually kill themselves.
Yeah.
And you know, look, life is short. It's we're here one day, gone the next. We have to do what we can to follow our bliss if we can, because many people don't have the kinds of, you know, you and I, we live in cultures where we have so much opportunity, whereas millions of people around the world that you and I both know this don't have the kinds of opportunities that you and I have.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And to your listeners out there, people listening to this podcast, if you don't have it in you, you know, if you just want to work in the service industry for your whole life, that's fine. Your life belongs to you. But if you have it in you, for goodness sakes, let it out. And you will feel so much better about yourself. When I posted that first book, I thought, gosh, I could die today. I'm glad that I didn't. But if I did, if I have a heart attack today, or if I get hit by a car or something like that, at least I left something behind. Just saying. At least I left something behind.
Yeah.
You know, other than an incident report for an unlocked door. Something that I actually started and saw through to completion.
It is an amazing, I remember my first, I've published four books, a book about my son has ADHD, so my first book was about him, and I just wanted to write a book, and somebody said to me, write what you know, write about your son, because you know that's something you know better than anyone. So I wrote about raising a child with special needs, and I can remember I ordered 20 copies of the book to come to my house for me to sell to friends and things. And that moment when you hold your book in your hand, it's the same with uploading it if you're doing an ebook. When you have your book and it's there, and it's like, oh my word, I did this. I came up with the idea. I wrote it. I sat there for all those hours. I stuck with it. Exactly. And here it is. I've done it. And it is, it's like having a baby. You know, obviously you've not given birth to a baby, I would imagine, but it's very much that kind of feeling that, you've birthed this thing that no one else could have given birth to at all. It is amazing.
It just gives your life a whole another level of meaning. I mean, all our lives are important, but I think that there is no greater satisfaction to be gained from life than the act of creation. You know, whether you have a podcast or you're a writer, or even if you're at some job that maybe is not your ideal job. And you know, at least, I mean, I try to go above and beyond every day on my day job. You know, I try to do a little more, like I pick up garbage. It's not my job to pick up garbage, but I'll do that. Sure, why not? Or I help people that if I have to put off my regular duties because someone needs my help, I'm glad to do it. But for goodness sakes, like you just said, follow your bliss. And the effort really does reward itself. And all your friends and family, they're so proud of you, right? And you actually attract more people into your life. You know, people and inspire them too.
Yeah. I have so many. Normally we go down this line of blah, 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 you know, how did you publish? Well, you told me how you published draft to digital, which I'm really intrigued by, actually, because I haven't used them. So I might go away and publish a book. Do you find that an easy process then?
Oh, yeah. I found draft to digital by accident. I don't know how I found it, but it took me like 5 minutes to post a book with them. I just found it super easy to use. And I found my books didn't have covers for the longest time. It's only the last few months that I've actually added covers to my books.
Okay. Later. Yeah.
I found a website called postermywall.com. It's free, which is great. Mm-hmm. It's super easy to use and it's fun. And some of my books, a couple of my books, I got ideas for stories just from looking at the images. Like I saw an image of a nuclear bomb. I thought, like a mushroom cloud. I thought, I'm going to do 24. I'm going to do Lee Hacklin, you know, is racing around in New York City trying to find the world's first suitcase nuke. Right? You know? And so, yeah, Amazon, I kind of gave up on that because I just found it to be too much of a headache.
Yeah. And where do your books go out to? Do they go to Amazon from Draft to Digital? They go out everywhere.
Right. Yeah. So Draft to Digital is like a springboard. Mm-hmm. And it sends your books out to like 8 or 9 different platforms. So one is Barnes and Noble, and there's another one called Kobo, and then there's like 5 or 6 others.
Okay.
So you know the books are out there, and if you go to Indigo, you can many of my stories have like the first chapter or like the first couple of pages. You can sample. And like I said to people out there, you said, you know, I would be more than happy. And now I'm friends with a lot of writers on Facebook, and sometimes they're sending me their stuff. And I get it, you know. I mean, I read an interview with, I think it was Nick Hornsby. He wrote About a Boy, one of my favorite books. He's a great writer. I don't mean to put words into his mouth, but I think he was the one who said, I know for a fact that none of my friends and family have read any of my books, not a single word. And when I read that, it really broke my heart a little bit. But now I get it. You know, we're all busy doing our own stuff. And my friends have families and they're running their own businesses. You know, my brother's a real estate agent. But the support that they give me and the pride that they give me is you can't put a price on that. I mean, sure, I'd be thrilled if I got an email from one of my friends like, hey, I read some of your book and I really enjoyed it. Even if they thought it was total garbage. Why?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm completely open to constructive criticism. That's another thing. You know, some writers, they post online, I got a negative review today. You know, I got 0 stars for one of my books. And sometimes I'll actually send them a message back, like, what are you complaining about? Somebody read one of your books. And if they read it all the way through, then they're being a little disingenuous, aren't they? There must be something about it that they liked or they wouldn't.
They didn't give up after 50 pages or whatever, yeah.
That's another thing. Read the review and try to get something out of it, right? You know, you might find something useful. I mean, I my girlfriend, Nicola, she lives in Adelaide. Hi, Nikki. She lives in Adelaide, Australia. You know, she just took like a film production course like 2 years ago, and she's already produced 2 or 3 films in Australia. And she's produced stage shows. And so I read her one of my Lee Hacklin short stories, and she was being supportive and kind of chuckling and seemed to be enjoying it or pretending to be enjoying it. Anyway. And then finally she said, you know, there's no mystery in your story. And I was like, like Homer Simpson, he's a private detective, right? Shouldn't there be a mystery? Because my stories tend to be my first stories anyway, they tend to be more about finding the bad guy and handing him his comeuppance, his karma kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah,
they tend to be more those like more physical.
Yeah.
And so I started doing that. I started writing whodunits, and she was absolutely right. You know, if somebody says to you, you suck, you know, first of all, that's not a person that you want in your life in the first place. But secondly, that's not a useful, not a useful criticism, right?
No,
so what she said to me was 1,000, and I love her for saying that. I love her anyway. But what she said was absolutely, and so I started doing that. I started writing whodunits.
Yeah.
And I find it to be a lot of fun, you know, because I'll start off like not knowing who the killer is. Mm-hmm. And then I get to like page 90 or something. And it's like, and I flip back and I'm like, it's just kind of, I don't change anything.
That is the magic of novel writing, isn't it? This is something that I've heard from so many novel writers, that your characters, your story just take over. You start off with an idea in mind, and then it kind of takes on a life of its own. And I didn't believe it until I wrote my own book. Yeah. And all of a sudden, my main character is a keen horsewoman. Now, I hate horses. I'm terrified of horses. But I have this character who loves horses and who goes off to Portugal to look after horses. And I was kind of... where does that come from? It was just magical where it went.
Discovery, right? I have another series called Lee Hacklin and and Urban Tiger team up. I've written kind of like Spider-Man and the Hulk, you know, they team up, right?
Yeah.
And so I discovered in a recent novel, I think it was The Aerobics Killer, that Tommy's girlfriend, Varvara, who's this beautiful Russian babe, has a crush on Lee.
Mm.
And I didn't know that until I wrote it. And I got excited because I've been writing these characters for 3 years now. And you know, you write a series. I mean, like The Simpsons has been on for like 30 years now.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's like, how many times can you see Homer and Marge break up kind of thing? But when I made this discovery, it opened a whole nother door.
Of course.
Because Tommy, you know, he's losing his mind. And Tommy looks at Lee as the epitome. Tommy loves Lee. They have a big brother, little brother kind of relationship. But he's absolutely insecure to the nth degree that something might... It's kind of like Luke, Han, and Leia kind of thing from the original Star Wars. When they weren't brother and sister.
Before it gets a bit...
I really hate the Luke and Leia brothers. If I could change one thing about somebody else's work, that would be the one thing
that
I would change.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, so again, it's when you're writing, it's like you said, like some writers, they write everything down in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't do that. That's not, right. I start out with a very vague idea and then I'm off and running. And it's just, it's like jazz. It's a free form. And I never get writer's block per se, but sometimes I'm like, well, I'm not sure what happens next. So I want to write. I want to at least get my pages in. So I'll almost like I'm starting another novel within the one that I'm writing.
Okay.
I'll just put something in there that has nothing to do with the story, and then I'll try to tie it together at the end. And maybe But the point is, you know, I got to crank out at least a couple of pages every day, no matter what's going on in my life, or I can't go to sleep at night, because this is what I want to do. This is my bliss. And it's your bliss. Yeah. And we're following that, and good on us.
Yeah. I've got another writer friend who's just started writing a crime novel. And she started the first one, and then she said she saw something and it triggered an idea in her head that she knew wasn't going to fit into this first crime novel. So she's now writing book number two, which is based on this. And I just think that, to be able to kind of flip around like that. Similar thing with you, that you kind of run out of steam with where you're going. So you just write something completely unrelated, really, and then try and feed back into it.
Create another character, just. I remember when I was in high school, we did an exercise in English class called speed writing. Mm. And so the teacher would write on the blackboard, I was walking home from school, .. And then you had to write nonstop for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Stream of consciousness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you scribble. And you don't second guess yourself. You just get it down. And then you'll find something that maybe is useful to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wrote a blog post yesterday about seven tips for overcoming writer's block. And that was one of them. Just write about any, just sit and say, I am going to write for 10 minutes and it doesn't matter what I write, just to get yourself going. And also getting into the habit of doing it. Like you said, you have to do you have to do a couple of pages every day.
Right.
If you get into that routine of doing it, something has to come, doesn't it? And it might, even if it's something unrelated to your book, just keep writing. It's that practice of writing that gets you writing.
And I think this is important too. If you have to will yourself to do it, then you probably shouldn't do it. I remember watching a documentary about Lou Ferrigno, and they interviewed Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he was talking about how he was very incredulous at how some of his fellow bodybuilders said that they had to psych themselves up before a workout. Mm. And he was like, I never have to psych myself up before a workout. His point was, and I think it's an important point, if you have to psych yourself up to do something, then you probably shouldn't do that thing.
It's not the thing for you,
right? I don't have to will myself to write or to reach out to people like yourself. It's like, I feel the scythe of death scratching my back every day. I'm 56 years old. And the older we get, the quicker time goes by. And I'm just like grasping like crazy. And I'm enjoying the journey of my life like never before.
Yeah.
And again, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be preachy, but everything that in my life changed once I took that leap of faith that God was real. And anybody listening to the podcast who's an atheist or an agnostic, whatever works for you, you have free will. But if you feel the way that I did 5 years ago or 3 years ago, like this is as good as my life is going to get. It's never going to get any better than this. For goodness sake, roll the dice. It doesn't cost you any money. They're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know, we all need someone to talk to sometimes. And sometimes we just want to talk. right? Yeah. We don't want to be interrupted. We don't want to be judged, right? We just want to express ourselves. And I've expressed a lot of things to God that I would not say to another person, especially stuff in childhood. And I just felt better about myself. You know, there's only one Alison Thompson in this world, and there's only one John Leister, right? Yeah. And everybody listening to your podcast right now, there's only one of you.
One of you, yeah.
You go towards that thing about yourself that's a little different from everybody else. Mm-hmm. And never mind whether you think you're good at it, never mind what your friends and family think, just do it because it makes you happy to do it. And I love writing. I love writing so much. I mean, I would give up on weightlifting. I would give up everything just to write every single day. And I love doing this. I'd rather do this than watch. I mean, I used to watch 5-6 movies a week. I think last year I watched 5 movies for the whole year. I saw Spider-Man No Way Home because I'm a huge Spider-Man nerd. And I enjoyed the movie. But there's my Spider-Man knapsack, by the way.
Very nice.
But my notebook, my notebook was burning a hole inside of it. And I thought as I was eating my popcorn, I thought I could be home right now writing. And truthfully, and it's like we have to remind ourselves sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Truthfully, I'd rather be at home writing than watching anybody movie. The only movie that I want to see really, and this may sound arrogant as hell, is a movie that has my name in the credits. Based on the
movie. Fair enough. Like,
That's
your dream. That's your dream, is it? That one of your books at least will become a movie at some stage.
I'm going to have a Zoom conference with some Netflix executives. And Nikki's going to be producer. She's going to produce the Treehouse Avengers movie. And we talked about casting. And I'm going to call an actor, a young, handsome, ridiculously handsome actor. And I'm going to say, Brad, or whatever your name is. Brad, I've got good news and bad news. The bad news is you're going to die someday. The good news is you're Lee Hacklin. I want that. Allison, I want that. I've got the opening credits for the Lee Hacklin TV series in my mind. Yeah. Like all these boxes on the screen, like a 70s detective show. And his theme song is No More Mr. Nice Guy by Alice Cooper.
Okay. It could happen. Anything is possible, isn't it?
I'm sure it's been used many times. And my dream theme song for Urban Tiger is Teenage Wasteland by The Who.
Okay. Fair enough.
Oh, I want that.
The thing though, isn't it? Anything is possible, and you don't know who might pick up one of your books one day and we'll read it and we'll think we'll be something in Hollywood or whatever, and or on the board at Netflix or whatever, and we'll think, this could be a really good film, this could be a really good series. You just don't know what will happen.
I hooked up with a couple of comic book artists who actually drew Lee Hacklin, and one of he's based on, do you remember an actor named Jan Michael Vincent from the 70s and 80s?
Yeah, Miami Vice. Yeah.
He was in Airwolf.
Oh, was he not Miami Vice? Who was that?
You're thinking of Don Johnson. Airwolf.
Okay. Airwolf, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he was on ITV. We didn't watch ITV in my family, but
he was just as insanely handsome, but he could play tough guys. You know, he had that rare combination.
Okay.
And so I hooked up with this artist, and he actually drew a picture of Lee Hacklin. And when I looked at this, it's just like, oh my God. Just to see something from your imagination manifested, it's a very surreal.
Wow.
You feel like a god almost. You just feel like you're your creator,
Anyway,
I'm running out of things to say, Allison.
We're running out of time here anyway. So
it's been
fabulous. And you've given us your website address already. One last thing. So what's next for you? You said you're writing something at the minute. I would imagine there's another 50 books in there. Plus.
So my latest novel, which is in production, is called Lee Hacklin, Private Investigator and Urban Tiger Team Up in Where is Molly Ryder? Now, Molly Ryder is Tommy's sister. Tommy is the Urban Tiger, and Molly is the Urban Tigress. She's kind of like a back girl.
Yeah.
And she's kidnapped by that. There are a bunch of girls go missing. I'm kind of muddling through the story. And Lee and Tommy are going to find these guys and teach them a lesson that
kick their butts.
They'll never remember because they'll never kidnap another girl again. That's what, writing is very therapeutic. I think that all of us as writers, we all feel like the world is very unfair. We feel like the bad people get ahead sometimes and good people are punished. So when we write these stories, particularly the genre, and that's why the genre is so popular, whether it's superheroes or good guys and bad guys, it's therapeutic. it's, you know, you create a character who does bad things, and then along comes a hero and sets things right.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Putting the world to rights.
It's a wonderful feeling for me. I love that in movies when an innocent person is beset, and then along comes the hero. I don't know why Hollywood doesn't do more of that because I feel like it works every time. Like in like a good example for me would be the Karate Kid remake. Mm-hmm. When Jaden Lee is being beaten up by the kids, and along comes Jackie Chan. And that scene was just, and Jackie Chan kind of tries not to hurt them, which I love. You know,
because they're kids, right? Yeah, because they're kids. You can't really do that, can you? Yeah.
He beats them up, but sort of like in a bare minimum kind of way.
Yeah, he's just a little gentle, roughing up.
He kind of makes the kids beat themselves up in that fight scene. It's very imaginatively choreographed.
Yeah.
I never get tired of that stuff. So anyway, so that's my latest book is and then the next one is going to be complete Lee Hackman, 1970s private investigator and completely concerned with sex.
Okay.
And it's going to be about the porn industry. It's going to be my boogie nights. And Lee is hired to provide security for a film production company that does X-rated movies. And they're beset by an activist group called ARG, which is Americans Rallying Against Gross Heresy, something like that. And the founding member of this group is Lee's mother.
Oh gosh, okay. Fabulous.
I'm gonna have a lot of fun writing that one.
I'm gonna look out for those. I'm gonna look out for Lee Hackman on Netflix as well. You know, I can see it coming.
If I fall into a coma, I would just be too much. You'd be too happy sometimes, you know.
John, it's been fabulous talking to you today. Yes, this conversation has gone in directions I never expected it to go in. It's been a real pleasure. I think we'll call it a day now, and I'll let you get on with drinking your coffee. And
thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for being my guest. It's been fabulous.
Good luck. Keep writing.
You too. John Leicester for being my guest on the show today. You can find all John's books, and there are many of them, at Indigo Books. Just go to indigo.ca and search for John Leicester. That's JohnLeister. They're also available on Amazon, and the links are in the show notes. If you're feeling inspired to put pen to paper, then I would love to help you. Just go to my website, theproofairy.com, to find out how I help with mentoring, group writing programs, self-publishing, and much more. You'll also find all the episodes of this podcast there, along with details on how to apply to be a guest on the show. This has been a Proof Fairy production in collaboration with my dogs, and I'll be back next week with another inspiring interview with another amazing author. Bye for now.